Hello, this is Peter Fisher, and this is episode 5 of the Fisher Files podcast. This week we'll be talking about calendars. So, all of you, pretty much know what to do with them. There's kind of a different way of thinking of calendars. And that is that they're kind of frameworks for your time. Most of us use calendars to record the time for appointments and times when things are due. And that's fine. But another thing that calendars can be used for is planning your time. For example, Friday from 10 to 12, I have set aside as a block on the calendar a time for the weekly review. Now, I could simply remember that. I mean, it's not a hard thing to remember. There's no real need to put it on a calendar. You don't put on brush, teeth, comb, hair on a calendar. But one of the reasons for putting the weekly review on the calendar is that it elevates it to a status of comparable importance to other things that I put on a calendar. And so an important thing to think about when you think about putting something on a calendar is that you're making it very much more important than anything you don't put on a calendar. Now, like to-do lists, you can actually have several different calendars. I basically have three. One is my work calendar, one is my travel calendar, and one is my family calendar. And the program I use, iCal, can display them all at the same time, which obviously is important for avoiding conflicts. But aside from keeping track of appointments and things, one of the main things I use my calendar for is setting aside time to do some things that are really important where I need a long stretch of time. And this is kind of one of the fundamental tensions in our business. I believe that it's very, very important in a university setting to make time to talk to people. And in fact, I began to feel much better. I'm not sure that I do any better, but I feel much better when I began to view my day as a series of interruptions. Before, I'd be sitting in my office and working on something, and somebody would come in, and I would, you know, sometimes just get rid of them, but, you know, very frequently express some kind of disappointment at being interrupted. But when you think about it, that's the reason you come to a place like MIT, is to talk to, you know, really smart, capable people. And it's really kind of a shame to restrict that intercourse to, you know, only those times where you have talks or dinner or something like that. You don't want to miss something that's important just because you didn't have time to talk to someone for 10 minutes. This is actually good because it's made me really think about what I'm doing during the day, in the sense that I want to be doing things that I can easily be interrupted from, and things that I'm not working on for a deadline that's that day. So one important thing you can use your calendar for is choosing those times where you are really going to close the door and make yourself inaccessible. And there's really nothing wrong with this. You shouldn't do it to excess, but the idea of closing your door, turning off the email, unhooking the phone is really valuable for setting aside the time to really get things done. Now, the to-do list could feed on to your calendar. You could plan, you know, sort of hour by hour what to-do items you're going to check off. That isn't even really a suggestion. I think that's just so obviously silly. It really can't work. One thing you have to trust about yourself is that you don't You're guided by the to-do list, but you're not a slave to it. And you really don't need the to-do list many times to tell you what the most important thing to work on is. You simply work on it. So one of the things about understanding how to use the calendar and the to-do list is, how much you want to be guided by both of those things. The other thing about putting things on a calendar is it really makes you think about them. Somebody calls and asks to talk to me, and I put their name on calendar for whatever time they've decided to come, and iCal defaults to an hour. And I always stop and think, like, okay, well, how much time does this person really get? That sounds a little bit crass, but it is important for you to decide how much time that you're willing to spend talking to someone, just in the normal course of your day. I do this when people get interrupted too. I take a quick look at the clock and kind of suss out what they're talking about and decide, okay, well, I'm going to talk to this person as long as they need to be talked to, which is usually what I decide. But, there are particularly irritating circumstances or people who tend to sort of natter on and on, and I really decide, okay, this gets 5 minutes, this gets 10 minutes. Now that's not something you're going to do with your calendar, but it is something that happens during the course of your day. So mapping your calendar onto your day is really kind of what it's all about. Another thing that is really important about your calendar is it really gives you a visual roadmap to your week or to your month. And one of the things I really do is during my weekly review is I sit down and look at the calendar and think, okay, is this working? In particular, are these meetings when they should be? Am I getting something out of them? Should I change the time? Should I change the content? We had some discussions about this earlier, a colleague and I, this year, and it was really useful. We came up with a focused technical meeting that would happen once a week in lieu of a more general meeting. And I think it really made a material difference in how things were going. So you want to always be looking at your calendar to make sure that you don't have a bunch of crap on there and that you have the things on there that you need to have. Now, one of the main things that shows up on calendars are meetings. And the interesting thing about meetings is that everybody seems to hate them, but nobody seems to have much hesitancy about calling them. And this just gets worse as time goes on. So I have a few rules about meetings. And since I'm a division head, I organize meetings from time to time, and then I get to go to other people's meetings. Number one, and this is a pretty hard and fast rule. Unless there's a compelling reason otherwise, a meeting should never last more than an hour. That really kind of fits with the human attention span. And generally, I found meetings that go on much longer than an hour really don't accomplish much in the additional times. The exception has been this year Physics Council, when we've just had a lot of things to do. And it's really taken the time to get through. Now, some people think, oh, well, we have a lot of things to do. We have a long agenda, so we're going to make the meeting 2 hours. And so are surprised when the agenda they thought they'd get to in an hour and 30 minutes goes right up to 2 o'clock or 2 hours. The fact of the matter is the meeting tends to expand whatever time you give it. And if you have a long agenda and want to get through it, then what you need is a person leading the meeting who's just going to move you through the agenda fast enough so that you can get out of there in an hour. So this is really point number two about meetings. Never go to a meeting where you don't know what the agenda is. It's just a bad idea. How can you prepare for a meeting if you don't know what's going to be discussed? I think it's actually kind of insulting to send out an announcement for a meeting without including an agenda. There are some other tricks for meetings, backing one right up against 5 o'clock or against an important seminar kind of ensures that it ends on time. Meetings that are less than an hour somehow don't seem to work. I'm not quite sure why. It's sort of like it's not important. If it's not important enough to be an hour-long meeting, then it's just not important enough. That's certainly not always true. So if you are organizing meetings, try to be courteous and make them just an hour long and provide a good agenda. If you go to meetings, and I think this is really important, it's a time that you sit and pay attention. You're there with other people to do things, to make decisions, to hear about things, and the whole modern multitasking environment, I think, is really very bad, where you have a meeting with 10 people in it, two of them are talking, and the other eight are doing various things on their computers. So rule three is, if you're going to a meeting, go to the meeting, no computer, or have the laptop closed if you have to bring one, and try to pay attention. Now, if you are the kind of compulsive person who just really needs to be doing something, you can take a stack of mail to go through, a letter to write, something that is not as demanding as the computer. Because the computer, once turned on, and once you're facing the screen, is something that really commands your attention. And I've watched what a lot of people do with their computer during meetings, and it's usually not working. It's usually kind of low-grade web surfing, not really paying attention to anything. But the computer's there, so there's this really itchy temptation to use it. So remember, the principle of a meeting is to really bring people together to have a discussion, not just get a bunch of people in the same room so they can all type on their laptop. So those are the three rules: 1 hour agenda and no computer. Now, just because somebody decides that they're going to have a meeting doesn't mean you have to go. Even if you do get an agenda, you just may simply decide that this is not worth your time. And the thing to do in that case is to send them a polite note saying that you won't be able to make the meeting. I don't always manage to do that, but it is a good idea to let people know that you're not showing up, just in case there is something. Now, frequently, you can save a lot of time in a meeting by preparing. Alternatively, you can save a lot of time in a meeting where no one is prepared by saying, look, let's stop this meeting and go and prepare. There are a few different kinds of meetings. There are meetings to disseminate information. And I generally consider these meetings rather useless. Most information can be disseminated by email or a web push page. And having a meeting just to hear, kind of a laundry list of announcements is generally sort of a waste of time. There are brainstorming meetings, and these are frequently a lot of fun, and where you're trying to come up with new ideas for something. And what you should prepare you for in these meetings is familiarizing yourself with the basic material. There are progress or review meetings. This is kind of the dominant sort of meeting that happens around a big high-energy experiment. You know, there are weekly analysis working groups, and there people make series of presentations about what they're doing and what the status is. Generally, unless you're one of the people lucky enough to be making a presentation, you really don't need to prepare for a meeting like that. You do want to listen carefully, because frequently you'll hear something of interest. A fourth kind of meeting is a meeting to actually decide something. This could be a paper review. This could be a fiscal meeting to decide how much money is going to be spent on certain things. And this is the kind of meeting you need to prepare for more than anything else. If it's, for example, a paper review meeting, and the bottom line of the meeting which should be expressed in the agenda, is to decide whether or not paper A gets published. You should show up having read the paper and having thought about what your comments are. Simply showing up and reading the paper in the meeting and then trying to comment is really bad form. Generally, you'll want to have a folder with all of the materials for a meeting, and we'll talk more about that when we talk about filing systems. But you should have that folder with you and have all of the information. So as you get older, you get to have your own meetings and you get to chair them. And your job as chair is to move the meeting along through the agenda. And there are just some really simple ways of doing this. There are people who really enjoy going to meetings and seem to not be cognizant of the fact that they're a finite length, and will simply waste your time. I was in that situation just tonight, a few hours ago. Somebody just needed to talk. Well, what do you do? So suppose you've got agenda item one. You say, this is something that you need to get ideas out on the table, and then you kind of need to gather up the ideas and assign little tasks to people for next time. For example, this could be a group meeting. So what you do is you bring up the agenda item, you let people talk on it, and you can sort of call on them, and let people interrupt, let the conversation flow. When you hear things begin to be repeated, stop calling on people. And when there's a break in the conversation, say, okay, so what we've got out of this is this thing, this thing, this thing, and Bruce thinks that, and David thinks that. Is there anything else? Now, if somebody wanting to hear themselves talk, or for whatever reason, says, simply repeat something, you can just look at them and say, oh, we already discussed that, and just let it go. You usually only have to do this once or twice before people get the idea that, you know where you're going, you want to move through the agenda items, and that repeating something isn't going to get any more attention or have them get their way. So you just keep asking, is there anything else, until there's nothing else. Then you summarize, and then maybe you go and dish out little tasks, you know, like, okay, David, you're going to get a high voltage supply and give it to Alexander, and Alexander, you're going to use that. That's what you should be writing down, too, as chair of the meeting. And then you can shoot those people an email directly after the meeting. But the key thing is learning to politely but firmly cut off somebody who's just sort of taken up space. I don't know why people like to do this, but it seems like a very popular thing to do. Now, there is the temptation to, instead of having a physical meeting, try to carry out the business of a meeting via email. In the case of a meeting that's purely about disseminating information, that's fine. That's actually better than having the meeting. In the case where people are giving progress reports, that can kind of work. Although people giving the progress report kind of meeting, frequently what comes out of that is somebody asks a question or makes a comment that's valuable to the person making the presentation. So that's really not a good thing to try to replace by email. A decision meeting, if this is the decision is simple and clear-cut, then replacing the decision meeting with email is fine. If making the decision is something that's going to really require discussion, email just won't work and can in fact leave people feeling unlistened to, which is never good. Brainstorming can be done by email, where you just kind of forward the ever longer email of people's ideas around, and people can react to it. That actually works fairly well, but the dynamic isn't as good as really getting everyone into the same room. So I would say that the review status report kind of meeting and the decision meeting are things that you should really have done face to face. If you're charged with having some kind of all-day meeting, week-long meeting, what you should keep in mind is that people can really only go for about 2 hours before they need a break. I know that seems like not very much time, but if you think about it, if you're having half-day sessions, that's a break in the morning and the break in the afternoon. If you go much longer, then people begin to just wander away to take care of various bodily needs. Whereas if you really have breaks at reasonable time, then people will pay attention and wait for the break before, going to do whatever. So coming back to calendars, the meeting will go on your calendar. The other things going on your calendar are appointments, classes, special times you're setting away for things. You can also put to-dos on your calendar if you want to do them or be reminded to do them at a specific time. I find it's very worthwhile to do this with, for example, bills and credit card statements. Just a reminder that you've got to pay your credit card in a couple of days to avoid a late fee. That's an excellent thing to put on the calendar. My calendar has untimed events, which are places where you can put all day events or just something big happening that day. And so that kind of goes across the top. And that's a valuable place to put really big to-dos or things like that. So to summarize, the calendar is your framework for your day. And I think in the academic environment, what I'm saying is you shouldn't just blow off your calendar, but you should leave plenty and plenty of time for interacting with people on a casual basis. For meetings, remember the three important rules: 1 hour, set an agenda first, and sit there and pay attention. And if you're running the meeting, remember, move through the agenda quickly, and use the trick of summarizing, is there anything else, and repeat until you're done. Few interesting things for this week's mind feed. I'm on a trip that involves a lot of long car rides and very crowded vans, and I was talking to a fellow, Phil Bennett, who's a geomicrobiologist from University of Texas, Austin, who studies bacteria and little life forms that live in cracks in rock, very, very deep. So these are things that generally don't have much access to light or any access to light, and have to subsist on things like sulfur, very low nitrogen environments, also very low oxygen environments. So these are little things that eat iron. Anyway, he was telling me a little bit about why this was important, and studying things that live deep underground is of tremendous value because many of these things are separated from the rest of the Earth's biomass. And so they don't have any opportunity to exchange genetic material and have just evolved kind of on their own for the past few million years. So one of the things he's interested in is how thermodynamics affects what can and can't happen. And he told me an interesting story about some recent results that indicate that it would be very difficult for life to take place on Mars, just based on the thermodynamic argument that in order to synthesize nitrogen into ammonia, which is commonly thought to be one of the most basic processes, would be very difficult on Mars because the Martian atmosphere only has a nitrogen pressure of 8 pascals. On Earth, the nitrogen partial pressure is about 70,000 pascals. With so little nitrogen, the reaction kinetics, or reaction dynamics, I guess, just, the thermodynamic balance tends to favor nitrates, which are NO3, very strongly, and so that it's essentially impossible to, at such a low pressure, to be able to take the nitrogen off the NO3 and make, for example, ammonia, which apparently is one of the most basic processes that you would associate with a living organism. I thought this was interesting because here's a really a biological argument, I mean, a thermodynamic argument applied to biology in a very direct way. And the connection with life on Mars is also pretty interesting. There was another very interesting article in Nature about something I just hadn't really heard of. I know a lot of strange people, so I thought I had heard about all the strange things that go on. Apparently, there has been a lab at Princeton for about the past almost 30 years called the PEAR Lab, which is the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Laboratory. And it was started in 1979 by the former Dean of Engineering and Applied Sciences. And its goal is to study whether or not you can, people, some people, can change the outcome of physical processes by mental intervention. So, some form of parapsychology or parakinesis. And after many, many studies, they claim to find a small effect. And so they're declaring victory and closing the lab. Of course, a lot of the article has to do with whether or not it makes sense to study parapsychology at all and how difficult it is in the United States. And there's some quotes from Bob Park, who I think is just a schmuck. I shouldn't say anything about science, but that's just my opinion. Just made me think that, from time to time as a physicist, I've thought of doing experiments to check psychokinesis, things like that. They're kind of nice little daydreams, but just makes me think that there is a community, and the community does act to suppress things by simply ignoring them. So that's in Nature, and I'll put the link on to that and some review articles. Also this month, in both Science and Nature, there are a couple articles, research articles on graphene, which I had heard about. I didn't know how graphene made. Graphene's a single atomic layer, two-dimensional layer of carbon atoms on, I guess, a hexagonal array. And since it's really two-dimensional, it acts like a superconductor. And those of you who have taken, for example, 806 or 8.322 know about, Landau levels and the quantum Hall effect. And this is a simple example of that. The first graphene layers were made just by rolling a pencil point across a piece of tape, and then that would deposit these single layers on the tape. And I guess the idea is that graphene offers a possibility for new superconducting devices. And the article in, there's one article in Nature that shows how you can form a Josephson junction using graphene, a graphene layer with two superconducting contacts, and goes on to investigate the magnetic performance and so on. This could be the next.
Another day, another dollar makes you wonder where you're.
So that's it for this week. As usual, I'd like to thank Sheila Marston and her husband John and Sean Thompson and Maynard Galinas at LNS Computing for providing disk space, and Homer Reed Bonnet Newman from Math Graphs. Next week we'll be probably just reviewing, and well, not probably, we'll be just reviewing and talking about how all of these things fit together. After that, I'm going to talk about email, which is something I think all of us are finding demands more and more time, consequently is amenable to some thinking about. And I have a few later podcasts about technology. So thank you for listening, and feel free to comment, and I'll talk to you next week. And until then, have fun and good research in Cambridge or wherever you are. Sister, she sure looks happy, but you and I know where she's really at. She's got to laugh to keep from crying. Too many people go through life like that, you know. Too many people go through life like that. Another day.